friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Gabon's 2015 African Footballer of the Year, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, and Nigerian midfielder Alex Iwobi have helped make sure Arsenal's longtime manager, Arsene Wenger, had a successful final home match. Aubameyang scored goals in the 14th and 75th minutes, while Iwobi scored Arsenal's final goal in the 64th minute as the Gunners thrashed Burnley Sunday 5-0 at the Emirates Stadium in London. The 68-year-old Wenger is stepping down after almost 22 years in charge of Arsenal. It was his 475th Premier League victory, and afterwards, the French manager had this to say.
It's impossible, unless you are complete robotic, you know, not to be emotional about that. It's 22 years of total commitment and togetherness, and it finishes on a day like that, and... Overall, I would like to thank everybody. You know, people have been great and supported the team, and I had the luxury to do that job for 22 years at the same club, so I can only say thank you. I'm grateful for that, and I'm a fan above all, and I will remain a fan.
The nearly 60,000 fans in London pay tribute to Arsene Wenger. There were red T-shirts in each of their seats with the slogan, Merci, Arsene! And there were also giant banners outside the Emirates Stadium with that same slogan. Wenger has led the Gunners to three English Premier League titles. This season, Arsenal is sixth on the EPL table with 60 points from 36 matches. Meanwhile, Premier League players and coaches are wishing 76-year-old Alex Ferguson well after the former Manchester United manager underwent emergency surgery over the weekend for a brain hemorrhage. Ferguson's former assistant coach at Man U, Brian Kidd, is now with Manchester City. Kidd took time from the club celebrating its Premier League title to share his thoughts on Ferguson.
He's such an iconic person, and there was a really somber mood, you know, yesterday evening and this morning. I don't think you really think Sir Alex indestructible. You know, we've all been brought up with him. And again, what he did for Manchester United, it's unreal. You know, and the pressure he was under every day to produce, it's phenomenal. Obviously, all of us at Manchester City is in our prayers and thoughts with Cathy and the kids, you know, and we wish him a speedy, healthy recovery. Hope it's really quick as well, but, you know, we send all our love to him. But I think that's everybody, you know, you lads as well, you've had your run-ins with him, but you know where he's coming from. You know, he wears his heart on his sleeve, and I can't thank him enough. You know, the opportunity he gave me, you know, I'm ever indebted to him. And, you know, we wish him all the love in the world and health and speedy recovery, and God bless to him.
That's Brian Kidd, an assistant coach with English Premier League champion Manchester City, talking about Alex Ferguson, who had emergency brain surgery over the weekend. And Kidd was speaking in Manchester, England. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. The Sunny Side of Sports remembers Jack Chamangwana, one of Malawi's greatest footballers, who died Sunday in Blantyre at the age of 61. Reports say Chamangwana had been suffering from high blood pressure and was admitted to the hospital last week. During his playing days, Chamangwana was a defender who made 133 appearances for the country's national team, nicknamed the Flames. Before his death, Jack Chamangwana worked as a technical director for Malawi's Super League club, B Forward Wanderers. Joining us now with more African club football news is reporter Samson Omale. Good evening, Samson.
Good evening to you, Sonny. We begin with match day one results of the CAF Champions League played this past weekend. Title holders Wydad Casablanca of Morocco survived a late siege by Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa in Pretoria to force a 1-1 draw. In the other Group C match, Horoya of Guinea kept a 100% away record in the competition this season by edging Port of Togo 2-1 in Lome, with captain Abubakar Kamara scoring the winner. TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo made an impressive start in Group B by whipping fellow former African champions Entete Sative of Algeria 4-1 in Lubumbashi. In Group D, favourites Etoile du Sahel of Tunisia, the only winners of all five present and past CAF club competitions, came from behind to hold Primeiro Augusto of Angola 1-1 in Luanda. In the same group, Mongaliso Shongwe scored on 80 minutes to earn Mbambe Swallows of Swaziland a 1-1 draw away to 2016 Champions League semi-finalists Zesco United of Zambia Ndola. Deji Ogenyebo and Ferdinand Ubum are sports journalists who were not surprised at the weekend's match day one results in the group stages of the CAF Champions League.
Well, still some dominant names in the CAF competitions. Unsurprisingly, TP Mazembe, their forte has always been the CAF Champions League, and they are back better, eating Etienne Sétif for 4, ended 4-1. For Wydad Casablanca, surprisingly, they ploughed a 1-1 draw against Mamelodi Sundowns. It's a good result away from home.
For Wydad Casablanca, I do not think it's a surprise, owing to the fact that they are the title holders of this competition. I think that alone is a confidence booster. You know, for Mamelodi Sundowns, they won the competition a couple of seasons ago, as well as TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo. These are teams that have tradition over the years.
And now to athletics news. William Yagon of Kenya and Amelewak Fakadu of Ethiopia took their respective titles at the Harmony Geneva Marathon for UNICEF and IWAF bronze medal road race on Sunday. Kenya's Yagon, winner of February's Lagos Marathon, broke from compatriot Joseph Aperimoy with 2 kilometers to go to win by more than a minute in 2 hours, 12 minutes, 10 seconds. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Elsewhere in African athletics, Ugandan runner Joshua Kiprui Cheptegei was one of the stars at last month's Commonwealth Games in Australia. Joshua became the third man in history to win gold medals in the 5,000 meters and 10,000 meters at the same Commonwealth Games. In the 10,000 meters race, Joshua set a Commonwealth Games record of 27 minutes and 19.62 seconds. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to this profile of Cheptegei by reporter Magumi Davis Rakawinj in Kampala.
The 22-year-old Ugandan long-distance runner started running when he was still a little boy. He says he would usually run after cows in his village in Sebe region of eastern Uganda, but little did he know he would participate in international sports events, let alone win gold.
Way back when I was young in primary, then I was just doing it for fun. I didn't know it was going to be all this. I was just doing it for fun, and you know, like when you go to graze animals, we would put pegs along the field. Then when the cows are grazing, we would run around the field. Yeah.
Just 5 years ago, the Cheptegei started training and participated in organized races. In 2014, Cheptegei participated in World Junior Championships in Eugene, Oregon, where he won the 10,000 meters race and was fourth in the 5,000 meters race. 2 years later, he participated in the 2016 in the Rio de Janeiro Olympic Games, where he placed 8th and 6th in the Olympics 5,000 meters and 10,000 meters finals, respectively. Since then, Cheptegei has gone on to win in regional and international competitions. But so far, the Commonwealth triumph ranks top of his achievements.
At the moment, I'm really so grateful and I'm privileged. I'm super excited for the double gold. And looking at the back, 1 year ago, down the road, I was a different person. And after, like, in the World Championship in August, I changed to be a little person by winning the silver medal. And then now I'm also a double gold medalist. So I hope I'm building a CV for myself in athletics, whereby in the future I want to become a legend and inspire a lot of people in the country, in the world, you know, in sports and also in different circles of life. Yeah.
Indeed, his story is already inspirational. In 2017, Cheptegei built an almost unassailable advantage in the men's race at the IWF World Cross Country Championship in Kampala, but with just one lap to run, he succumbed to fatigue, and the disappointment of home fans finished in the 30th position. Fellow Commonwealth participant Robert Chemonge says he learns from him that hard work pays.
Yeah, I learned that we need to train hard because when Joshua was running, he was running with Kenyans and I had to run. So it gave me a lot of hope that also if we train hard, we can still also perform better.
Cheptegei's exploits at the Commonwealth is already bearing fruits. The government has promised to build him and his fellow gold medalist Stella Chesang houses. He has also been promoted by the police and his salary increased a double-fold. But he says the government has one more thing to do.
You know, we don't have the right infrastructure and the facilities, you know, like the Kenyans and the Ethiopians, they have better facilities. So if we want to see many Cheptegeis, they're going to finish up the project intermediate, which will be able to spark and, bring out so many champions. We have so many of them, thousands of them in the villages there. So if the government can support from grassroots level, then we shall be headed for success.
In 2010, the government pledged to construct the National High Altitude Training Center as a way to appreciate Moses Kipsiro for winning two gold medals at the 2010 Commonwealth Games. Standing at 2,573 meters above sea level, the facility is expected to be the highest in East Africa. After Cheptegei's success at the just-concluded Commonwealth Games, President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni has promised to fast-track the project that has since stalled. For the Sony side of sports, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinj in Kampala.
Thanks, Mugume. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sonny side of sports on The Voice of America. American Galen Rupp and the Kenyan-born Jepkurui Kidder won the men's and women's titles Sunday at the Volkswagen Prague Marathon in the Czech Republic. Rupp hit the tape in 2 hours, 6 minutes, and 7 seconds, taking off more than 3 minutes from his previous personal best set at last year's Chicago Marathon here in the USA. Rupp won a bronze medal in the marathon at the 2016 Olympics in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. In Prague, he broke away from Ethiopia's Cisse Lema in the final 4 kilometers. Lema finished second in 2 hours, 7 minutes, and 3 seconds. And Kenya's Stephen Chemlani was third in 2 hours, 9 minutes, and 42 seconds. Speaking after the race, Galen Rupp said, and I quote, "Cisse is a really great marathon runner. It was no easy feat, and I'm really pleased I managed to defeat him and win." In the women's race in Prague, Bourne's Jepkurui Kidder took more than 4 minutes off her previous personal best, winning in 2 hours, 24 minutes, and 19 seconds. The Kenyan athlete says she had a really good race, and the only slight issue she had were the cobblestones on the course. Guess it was a little bumpy in Prague. The 24th edition of the Volkswagen Prague Marathon featured a total of 9,778 runners. Britain's two-time Olympic gold medalist Sebastian Coe, who is now the president of the International Association of Athletics Federations, or IAAF, was the official starter in Prague. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sonny side of sports on The Voice of America. Australian golfer Jason Day has won his 12th PGA Tour title here in the USA. Joining us now with more details is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Well, it was a good day for Jason Day. The former world number one clinched a two-stroke victory at the Wells Fargo Championship at Quail Hollow in North Carolina on Sunday. After the win, Day said, fighting through a difficult final round makes this win particularly special.
Obviously, I think, I've had some tough finishes before with wins, and I remember specifically Bay Hill, but this was probably the toughest with how I was driving it out there, you know, hooking the ball in the water on 14 and not knowing what was going on, how Aaron was playing, if he was going to birdied 14, but if he was going to birdie 15, trying to... You know, I hit a lot of great solid putts coming home, but being able to birdie 16 and 17 and just really give myself that two-shot buffer going down the last hole was huge.
And Day said nearly acing the 17th hole was just the push he needed.
When I hit it, it was on a cracking line. It was beautiful. And then it just had this massive bounce, hit on the downslope, and fortunately hit the pin, which was nice, and went to about 2 or 3 feet. So that is, things like that is what you need. To win golf tournaments along the lines of what happened on the last hole yesterday, staying up and being able to capitalize on that opportunity and hitting it on the green and making par. So, looking back on it, I think, they're just key moments. I said earlier, they're just kind of building your character up, and, you get punched in the gut a couple of times out there, hitting, bogeying 13, bogeying 14, hitting in the water on 14. They feel like you're in the 10th round in a fight, and being able to get back on your feet and push forward was huge.
Day's victory at Quail Hollow sets him on an upward course to number 7 in the world rankings, and he says his ultimate goal is a return to the top.
When you're walking around and there's so many golfers in this world and you know that there's no one better than you, that's a pretty awesome feeling. And I know the feeling and what it felt like to be number one, and I know what I had to do to get, to get there. I this is a good kick in the right direction, having two wins this kind of early-ish in the season. My next step is to try and win a major this year. It'd be nice to be able to, capitalize on, the good play. And if I can do that, hopefully the U.S. Open comes around nicely for me.
Tiger Woods, meanwhile, finished 2 over par at Quail Hollow. After he played his final round, Tiger said that while he played a fairly decent game, he was disappointed that he failed to make birdie, his first birdie-free final round since 2014. But Tiger said, quote, "It's just one of those weeks, and I'm on to the next week," which is nice. That's one of the great things about golf, is that once the tournament's over, you're on to the next week. The PGA Tour announced Sunday that Woods will play the first 2 rounds of the Players' Championship, beginning this Thursday in Florida. Let's move on to soccer. 14 minutes into Sunday's testy El Clasico match, Cristiano Ronaldo scored Real Madrid's first goal against Barcelona and injured his ankle in the process. Following the goal, he immediately received treatment on the field, and after a few minutes of limping around, he shook it off and played for the remaining first half. But at halftime, Ronaldo exited the game with what was diagnosed as a slightly sprained ankle. After the game, Real Madrid manager Zinedine Zidane said Ronaldo was a bit worried because his right ankle was swollen, but overall, the injury is a small thing. Zidane did not put a time frame on Ronaldo's injury, but he expects that he will be cleared in time for the Champions League final against Liverpool in 3 weeks. By the way, Sunday's match ended in a 2-2 draw. And Sonny, my guess is Ronaldo will certainly not miss the World Cup, and with 38 days to go, here's another fun fact. 38 is the number of goals Danish striker Preben Elkjær Larsen scored in 69 international appearances. Some may remember Larsen from the mid-1980s as a key member of the beloved Danish Dynamite team. Larsen boasts an impressive 100% scoring rating at the FIFA World Cup. He scored 4 times in as many matches at Mexico 1986. In this year's World Cup, Denmark will appear in Group C, along with teams from France, Australia, and Peru. Staying with the World Cup, I want to mention also that on Sunday, the Nizhny Novgorod Stadium officially opened 400 kilometers east of Moscow. The stadium broke ground 3 years ago to be finished in time for Russia 2018. On Sunday, the stadium hosted its third test match. 40,000 spectators were in attendance, but the stadium could have easily fit 5,000 more. Six matches will be held at the new stadium, including a round of 16 tie and a quarterfinal. This year's World Cup kicks off on June 14th. The excitement is building, Sonny. Back over to you.
I'm getting excited, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten, counting down the days to the World Cup. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sonny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
They're playing back.
The National Basketball Association playoffs continue later Monday night with games in Cleveland, Ohio, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers are aiming for a sweep of the visiting Toronto Raptors. The Cavs have a commanding 3-0 lead and will advance to the Eastern Conference Finals with another victory. Meanwhile, in Philadelphia, the Boston Celtics hold a 3-0 lead over the Philadelphia 76ers, so the Celtics can advance this evening, too, with a win. In results Sunday, the Houston Rockets and the defending NBA champion Golden State Warriors both posted road victories, and they now lead their respective series 3-1. In New Orleans, Louisiana, the Warriors pounded the New Orleans Pelicans 118-92. Kevin Durant led the Warriors with a game-high 38 points. At the post-game news conference, Durant commented on Golden State's high-powered offense.
Yeah, I mean, just the experience, you know, guys that have been there before, just that IQ for the game. You know, you got guys that could, multiple guys that can penetrate and make plays, and it's good for, you know, scores like you know, Clay, Steph, and myself, you know, Andre and Draymond, they do all the utility stuff as, you know, driving to the rim, getting stops, getting rebounds, just, you know, and then knocking down shots when they get, you know, the opportunity to shoot them. So I think we played off each other well. We're going to need it even more at home for game five.
Game five in this series between the Warriors and the Pelicans is Tuesday night in Oakland, California. Golden State is bidding for its third NBA title in the past 4 years, and it looks like the Warriors might be playing the Houston Rockets in the Western Conference Finals. The Rockets beat the host Utah Jazz on Sunday, 100-87, and as I mentioned, Houston now leads that series 3-1. Guard Chris Paul celebrated his 33rd birthday with a game-high 27 points for the Rockets.
Yeah, we just tried to be aggressive on both ends. We knew that they were going to play a lot better than they did game three. And, you know, we just tried to sustain it all game. CC was huge, you know, protecting the rim, everybody that came in. We knew they were going to make a run at some point, but we just tried to stay the course.
We heard Chris Paul say CC was huge. He's referring to teammate Clint Capella, who had 15 rebounds and 6 block shots in game 4 for the Rockets. James Harden, still sporting my favorite beard in basketball, added 24 points for the Rockets, who now will host game 5 on Tuesday night in Houston, Texas. And that wraps up the May 7th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In late April, the U.S. Department of State released its country reports on human rights practices for the year 2017. These reports are a natural outgrowth of our values as Americans, said John Sullivan, who was serving as acting Secretary of State at the time of the report's rollout.
Promoting human rights and the idea that every person has inherent dignity is a core element of this administration's foreign policy. It also strengthens U.S. national security by fostering greater peace, stability, and prosperity around the world.
The United States does not rank countries by their human rights record, nor do we pass judgment. However, we would like to point out a few countries with the most egregious human rights records, said Mr. Sullivan. Syria has committed horrendous human rights abuses in 2017, including barrel bombing of civilians, attacks on hospitals, widespread reports of rape and abuse by Syrian government personnel. In Burma, ethnic cleansing has caused nearly 670,000 Rohingya people to flee to Bangladesh in recent months. Thousands have died. Those responsible for the violations, abuses, and attacks must be held accountable. The North Korean regime systematically neglects the well-being of its people to finance its illicit weapons programs via forced labor, child labor, and the export of North Korean workers. China continues to impose restrictions on activists, civil society, freedom of expression, and the use of arbitrary surveillance. Iranian authorities continue to deny their people the right of peaceful assembly and freedoms of association and expression. In Turkey, the detention of tens of thousands of individuals under an ongoing state of emergency has undermined the rule of law there. In Venezuela, the Maduro regime represses the human rights of the Venezuelan people and denies them their right to have a voice in their government through free and fair elections. Finally, the Russian government continues to quash dissent and civil society, even while it invades its neighbors and undermines the sovereignty of Western nations. America leads the way globally to promote human rights. We will also continue to impose consequences on those who abuse human rights, Mr. Sullivan declared. No human rights abuser, no matter where in the world, is out of our reach. The human rights reports are a significant part of that overall effort.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and former Prime Minister Raila Odinga have agreed to end their political animosity. A discussion on Kenyan politics on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, Managing Editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.